Peter, and good afternoon. By the way, just as half of the people who actually participate in this project, so we're missing the other half. Just online on my presentation, I will do a brief introduction. Will be very brief because most of what I put there, you already hear from the other speakers. And I will go to present two case studies in what we did in the Bolivian Altiplano, one with the kind of integral and participatory research in the northern Bolivian Altiplano, and the other one is using a deficit irrigation for quinoa production as adaptation measure in the southern part of the Bolivian. And finally, I will make some remarks. Probably you know that the Andes is one of the longest continental mountain range, 7,000 kilometers long, between 200 and 700 wide, 7 countries, 6 million of people, most of them are indigenous, but it's a semi-arid region with low fertility, 3.2 million of cultivated land. Most of the land is cultivated by we call subsistence farmers or small farmers, and crops like potato, quinoa, or native crops like amaranthus, oca, barley, and new crops like onions are mostly in the area. And also we have some animal production with camels like llamas, alpacas, vicuñas, which are native from the regions, but also we have sheep and a milk production, which is coming like a very good business for the farmers. In the actual conditions, the agriculture is vulnerable, not for the future, but it's vulnerable now. I mean, the conditions for working in the Altiplano are very hard. We have extreme low temperatures, we have frosts, we have droughts. Some areas we have droughts, floodings, and the precipitation levels is low in general, and it's low in the south part of the Bolivian Altiplano, lower in the south part of the Bolivian Altiplano. And the risk for having hail and this kind of extreme events is also high. So the situation is already vulnerable, so the only thing we are expecting from the future is the situation will be worse. That's the, probably you saw this, it's just what are the climates, what the models say and what the trends say. In general, we think we will have an increase in the temperatures, the maximums and the minimums, and we will have like the same rainfall, but what we also are expecting we will have some kind of reduction of the rainfall period or the rainfall season and delay in the starting of the rainfall season. So what we did is working with these conditions, and we present these two projects in order to see what we can do with this. The first one is a project we work with some colleagues from the several universities here in the U.S., and we work with some colleagues in Bolivia. And the project was developed in Peru and Bolivia, but as a university in La Paz, we were in charge of the part of the north of Altiplano. This is a micro basin, it's called Huaquisco. And what we did are several studies about markets, soils, climate, biodiversity, plant pathology, and hydrology in different aspects. And also we saw what we can develop these studies with participatory. So the first thing we did is kind of asking for permissions at the community so we can work with them in different adaptation measures, but also we can work putting different tools and different instruments to look in the climate and in the water resource in the watershed. So I'm not going to talk about the soils or the pests and the social aspect because you already hear that. So I'm going to concentrate more in the water resource and the land use in this area. One thing you can notice here is we have a lot of weather stations, hobos. We install like probably 10 points of control during 4 years of the project. And we also put some flow control so we can have weather measures, and also we have climate parameters measures. So this is part of one of the colleagues already did with this. He used the SWAT model. We can see the water balance of this watershed. And most of the time, we have a deficit in the balance, except for the January, we have some reserve. That shows that we are in a condition where most of the time we have a deficit in water. In the same way, when we look in the runoff and the flows, we saw the availability of water for irrigation is about 43 millimeters for all the watershed. That means we have this amount of water for thinking about doing some irrigations. Using the same model, we look for areas where we can have some erosion problems. Those are the communities and where we put a control point. And using, we have some erosions, some areas where the erosion could be worse than in other areas. So that's the, actually this map, we developed that in the SWAT, it's a modeling. And we conclude that some areas have more potential for erosion than the others. And one actually what we are doing now, and this is really in these couple last months, is try to look what will be the water balance for the present and the future. We work with these climate scenarios for the 2050. And we just look for the water balance, for the availability of water versus the use of the water. And we saw that for the future, most of the availability of water will be less than what we have right now. So that is very important if we consider that the government in Bolivia is thinking to implement a very big plan of irrigation, but they are taking into account the data of the availability of water is they are taking this data, but they are not taking into account what will we have in the future. So that's one of the things that probably we need to find out with the decision makers so they can look more closely to this aspect. The other thing also, what was very interesting is working with this change in land use. And one thing, before we project the land use in the future, what we did is just look what happened with the land use in the past. So we use aerial images, and we use high resolution images from the same watershed. And as you can see here, actually there are changes in the land use, mostly because of the human intervention. The green area are the area with crops, and these areas were small in some time, but for the 2007, these areas are growing. And we expected that these areas will grow more in the future because of the human pressure on the land. Those are the chains of rate, and as you can see here, most of the soil use types are decreasing, but the area of crops is increasing. So that's the main reason for changes in land use. And most of the areas who are decreasing are converted to use in for growing crops. And one of the problems is with the wetlands, which are very important, as Roberto said, for carbon sequestration and for water conservation. So that's, farmers are taking that land for convert to do agriculture instead to just keep or leave for water conservation. And this thing is also showing what will be the tendencies in the future. It seems like areas like for the trees and shrubs will become areas for cropping, because these areas are in areas where before were marginal areas, but now, because probably because of this increasing of the temperature and reducing the frost, for example, are getting more and more for crop. So that's the first case. And we did a lot of work with soil conservation. We did we tried some, and we are now with 4 years of data in insect population following. So that data is coming out, and we hope we can finish that work and we can continue in the future. That's, I think, getting this data is very important to see what we will do in the future. The second case is a case that is related more with using our practices for quinoa production, and this is in the southern part of Altiplano. And before I talk about the deficit irrigation, I would like to show what's happening with the quinoa production. So quinoa, I pointed out here that quinoa is changing from a food security crop to a cash crop. And for the government, this is the only crop for the Bolivian Altiplano is going to make as much as money like soybean in the lowland. And why is that? Because we have the increasing of the production, but the yields are really low. I mean, this, we are talking about 0.5 tons per hectare. And what is happening is they are taking land was used for grazing llamas, and taking that land for growing quinoa, actually. And that is because the prices of the quinoa are really getting crazy, I guess. It's 3,000 per ton in the last year. So it's, that means like 4 times the price of a ton of soybean. So that is a lot of pressure in the land, but the yields are not getting better. And for that reason, we thought we should implement a practice in order to improve the yields. That was the idea to use deficit irrigation. But also it was good because we use a software, it's AquaCrop, it's a growth development program, was developed by the FAO and was calibrated for quinoa. So we can use this model to see what will be the quinoa production with a specific climate scenario. So the idea was just try to determine the adaptation cost for quinoa using deficit irrigation. What we did first is just characterization of the rural livelihood. We collect data through the surveys. We make a cluster analysis. We make a livelihood approach. And we use a simulation model for quinoa profit with production costs, irrigations, and yield response to watering and price variations. And the actual model we use for estimate the irrigation cost is we use the information of the crop and the climate soil data, and we calibrate the aqua crop model, and we come out with a quinoa, con the yield of quinoa, the current yield of quinoa. But we use the climate scenarios. We work with Magali Garcia, she's the climatologist in our team, for the 2050, and we combine these two so we can have some data of quinoa yield by 2050. So we compare these two yields in order to have a delta yield, which will be necessary to put some irrigation, and that irrigation will have some cost in terms of water price, so we can come up with some adaptation costs. In the cluster analysis, we identified three types of farmers. Farmers who are, we call livestock farmers because they have more llamas and they just have, but also they have quinoa producers, but they have more income from the llama production. The quinoa farmers, those are really the farmers who are dedicated to produce quinoa and to put a lot of investment in quinoa, and they almost sell 75% of the what they produce, they sell to the market. And also we have a subsistence farms, which are a group who have less land. They choose in they produce, the yields are really low for them. They sow a lot less land than the others. But they also produce quinoa because probably quinoa is the only crop that's suitable in this area. And most of the crop they sold is for self-consumption. And one thing is important for this subsistence farm is the off-farm income. Just to look in the what's happening in the area, we look in the Tola population 10 years ago and the Tola population now, and most of the farmers are agreed that the Tola population, which is a shrub, native shrub, which is used for grazing and also is using for conservation plan, is decreasing. And the main reason of decreasing, as we can expect it, is because of the land is used for quinoa production. That is the result from the surveys. And in terms of extreme events of climate threats, the farmers think the droughts are the most important, and also the frosts. And this is the pentagram that came out from the livelihood analysis, and it's just, you can see the physical capital is important for the quinoa producers, and most of the capital for the subsistence for producers are very low. And here are the results from the scenarios. The first line, the first row is the calibration model. Because we don't have a variation in precipitation, but we have this variation. We have years with dry years, normal years, and wet years. So we use these three different years that we have in the past. And we use these temperatures, the increase in temperatures. And if you can see the field years we come out are actually higher than the current yield the farmers are getting. And that's probably because of the temperature and the conditions are better. But in this part, in this last part, what we did is actually we run the model, but just delaying the rainfall. I mean, delaying the starting of the rainfall season. So that was the scenario for that was really really bad. We just came out with a 100 kilograms per hectare, either for wet, normal, or dry years. That means if the, in the future we have this delay in the starting the rainy season, we probably we don't have any more quinoa production in the area. What is the irrigation concept? Is very kind of simple. We don't, with rain fed, actually we can get 0.5 megagrams per hectare. With full irrigation, we can have as the potential yield probably 2 tons per hectare. But with deficit irrigation, we can have not as a full irrigation, but we can have more than the rain fed irrigation. And why apply deficit irrigation instead of full irrigation is because we don't have too much water in the area, and we don't have, and we need to see how we can improve the water productivity in this case. And the model also was calibrated for one of our colleagues in for quinoa, and he came out with these results with for rain fed, for full irrigation and deficit irrigation. So we use this data, and we run the model with deficit irrigation with 230 to 250 millimeters of deficit irrigation for a wet, normal, and dry years, and we come out with this yields for these years. With that data, we put in kind of economic optimization model, and we use these three types of farmers, and we found that was even because of the investment of the farmer in the irrigation system, which could be probably the drip irrigation is the most adequate for deficit irrigation actually. So we come out with only the quinoa farms who are better, who use better the technology, who manage better the crop, they can get some profits, not the livestock farms, and also the subsistence farms when the year is wet. Just some remarks. Climate's not only one, it's not the only one source of impact on the Andes. We should consider the market probably is also important, and the social aspect. And because in Bolivia now we have kind of changes in the social aspect, very important, so that we should consider that if we can look in as an integral problem. Uncertainty for the future climate is higher at local scale. That's also important. One thing I already say is the Andes are already vulnerable, so we are in very hard conditions, so this condition will get worse, and the farmers will stay there. I mean, they stay for millions of years, and they will remain there, so we should look for what to do in that area. We learn a lot from the multidisciplinary approach in the project in the north part, and what's really interesting for us, because we can learn a lot from the social parts as the technical, the scientific part. And one thing is important, we learn a lot from the farmers. So the multidisciplinary approach is good. But one thing I also learned is very expensive. So as a local university, we cannot do that. And the most important aspect for us is water management, probably will be one of the key aspects in the adaptations. And the adaptation cost at local level, that's one of, at farmer level is one thing that neither the government nor the other, the local government are considering. But they consider to build irrigation system, but they don't know how much will cost the irrigation system to put from the channels to the plots. That's the cost of the farmers. And probably farmers won't have enough to do that. Just to as kind of knowledge, the first logos here are all the institutions we participate in the first project, and it's called the Sunrise Project for us, and Corinne was the leader of that project. And the second project is a project, collaborative project with the KU Leuven in Belgium and a resource from the Belgian Corporation. Thank you.
Any questions for Jorge in his presentation? Okay. Any questions for any of the other speakers? We didn't have time. Any comments?
Jose, is it? I'm not sure the pronunciation.
Yeah.
In one of your slides, you have the four I's of agroforestry. I wondered what they were, because I talk about the four F's of agroforestry. Fertilizer, fences, firewood, and forage. Forage, you didn't mention at all.
Yeah, four I's. Intentional, integrative, interactions, and intensity. Those are the four lines. I didn't have the time to go into those guys. Peter was there, and I was afraid that he was going to drag me out of the
I was about to. Any other, it's interesting, there are four I's and four F's. That's good. Any other points, questions? Yeah.
I have a few comments. One is, now that we're talking about agroforestry, two comments. One is that we measure carbon in salt and coffee under shades. And they were in the top 30 centimeters, about 90 tons per hectare, compared to 75 on the, from the primary forest.
Okay.
And the other thing is that all these soils are rich in carbons. The carbons are very labile. The recalcitrance there is very, very limited. So as you incorporate them into agriculture, you lose a lot of whatever carbon forestry. The other comment is that can probably the reason why you didn't get a good response in Panama, just looking at the location, is because they are not in the poor people's area. So probably the few poor people included in the survey are the ones that have benefited from it. But the others are in places where dominated by richer farmers. Overall, I think we need to have an analysis of the entire system and not only the productivity and the economics of it. Just looking at the quinoa example, we need to look at how quinoa is affecting soil fertility, soil carbon. If you are moving from areas low producing areas where the quinoa is produced into grasslands and bushlands. What is the impact of that in terms of the total carbon, like the energy percentage on encroaching agriculture into grasslands and peatlands and all the other areas. So we need to do a total productivity and look at the feedback into the environment. I would imagine that you would lose a lot of carbons and the water retention capacity as you move into those lands. So we need to actually estimate what is what we're doing in terms of environmental indicators in those
talk that we had tried to schedule but we weren't able to do was discussion about livestock. And in many of these systems, livestock are really a lot of motivation for farmers in what they do in their crops. So we thought that was important, yes, we weren't able to include it. But many people talk about